Well, it starts with guns and gun control. Lawmakers passed and Governor Markell signed a bill closing a gun sale loophole. What does this new law do, and was getting it through the General Assembly expected?
On a basic level, if you've never had a problem with processing your background check while you're buying a gun, this new law probably won't affect you. So right now, the federal background check system has 3 days to finish your report. And if they don't complete it, your local firearm dealer can finalize that gun sale for you. Now, state law will extend that waiting period to 25 days before you might be able to walk out of that store with a gun. As for getting it through, there was a period of time where passage in the Senate was uncertain. Democrats had it on the agenda for several days and continued to skip over it when they couldn't lock down the votes. That 25-day waiting period itself was a compromise. When it was originally introduced, the time frame was 30 days. And before that, the initial proposal was actually an indefinite period, meaning you don't have a clear background check, you don't get a gun. It did eventually pass, obviously, like we said, with one moderate from each party switching sides in the Senate.
Very interesting. There was, of course, also a no-fly, no-buy rule banning those on the terror watch list from buying guns that came up this week in the General Assembly. It wound up being tabled. Any chance that will come back in the final week, or is that maybe just something that those who are really interested in reacting to the shooting in Orlando wanted to at least make a statement with?
Sure. I honestly don't see it coming up again. The Legion of Opposition is pretty strong on this topic, from the National Rifle Association to the American Civil Liberties Union. Both argued that the no-fly list and the terror watch list, which prevent people from getting on airplanes, are heavily prone to error in their current forms. So the ACLU has sued several times over the use of that list, mostly because it denies due process. Mm-hmm. People who appear on these lists don't know it until they show up at an airport gate and they're told they can't board and they have no idea why. The government doesn't have to tell them either as far as the evidence against them, and there's no appeals process to get your name off that list. And because those documents are classified, there's also a question of whether or not it could even be implemented just from a state-by-state level, since it's not illegal for someone on those lists to buy a gun right now at a federal level. We saw a few similar bills introduced in Congress recently, but none of them could even get enough support for debate on the floor, which led to the Democratic sit-in in the House earlier this week.
So a lot of this is kind of just an opportunity for those who are looking to move on gun laws to show that they have an interest in doing so, which brings me to the next question. Is there a sense that gun control advocates here are feeling a bit more emboldened and perhaps may make a push next year for things like an assault gun ban, limiting large magazines, measures that we did see a few years ago in the wake of the Sandy Hook school shooting that didn't gain traction then?
It's certainly possible. The Delaware Coalition Against Gun Violence, which I should say is led by two former state politicians, has ramped up their lobbying efforts in the background for the past year or two, I would say. And with that being said, I haven't heard of any further movement for banning high-capacity magazines or assault weapons. If they were to bring back the assault weapons issue, I think they'd have a hard time overcoming the complete bungling of the last attempt to do so. Back in 2013, like you mentioned, shortly after Sandy Hook, lawmakers swore the gun owners who already had or already owned these type of weapons would be allowed to keep them and that there wouldn't be a registry. And what happened? The bill created a registration system which completely burned any chance that measure would get debated. The other problem for Democrats is that they've lost seats in both the House and the Senate, making the margin to pass these bills pretty slim. And they have members of their own caucus, which typically do vote against gun control issues.
And also it'd be a bit of a different issue because back in 2013, leading the charge were Governor Jack Markell and then Attorney General, the late Beau Biden. They both would not be involved in anything that happens next year. Governor Markell is finishing out his term, likely to be somebody else in office. That would also, I guess, kind of change maybe the tenor of it as well.
Yeah, that's right. And we don't know where exactly Congressman John Carney stands on any of these issues, since he's the apparent front runner as the sole Democrat who's running for governor. We generally know where Senator Colm Bonini stands and Lacey Lafferty, who's his Republican opponent. But we have no idea about gun control as far as Carney is concerned or any of his priorities should he become governor.
And we know that Matt Dehn was part of that push a couple years ago as lieutenant governor, though it doesn't seem like something that he has made made a major priority of his as Attorney General at this point.
No, he really hasn't waded his toes into the water on this one, aside from maybe modifying sentencing guidelines, but that's about it.
Okay. The final DFAC revenue estimate came in on Monday, offering no relief to budget writers, actually a little less money available. With the general fund spending plan largely in place, introduced at the end of the week, that means uncertainty with bond bill and grant and aid. Where do things stand with those two pieces of the budget?
Oh, they're still uncertain. If you want to talk dollar figures, lawmakers have $41.6 million left to split between grant and aid and bond bill. Earlier this week, the Joint Finance Committee did meet to refinance some government bonds, which rakes in a little more than $7 million. State budget officials are also poring over spreadsheets to see what capital projects might be behind schedule in the current year that could, you know, scoop a few more pennies into the change jar. And the $6 million for the Wilmington school redistricting effort could come into play as well. Factor in an 8% proposed cut to most nonprofits in grant and aid, and lawmakers are just waiting for finalized figures before making a move next week.
You mentioned that money budgeted for the WIAC redistricting plan for Wilmington schools could be available. That plan did pass the House this week, but even if it passes the Senate, which is uncertain, it may be put on the back burner because of the costs. It's estimated at $7.5 million, and WIAC officials say it's pretty much $7.5 million or bust, correct?
Yeah, that's right. WIAC Chair Tony Allen told us Wednesday that he'll suspend the redistricting efforts for another year if they can't get that $7.5 million. Well, I guess what I see happening is the Senate signs off on these redistricting bills that don't commit to a specific funding source, even though it's going to be a tough vote. It absolutely will be a tough push in the Senate. Without enough money to pay for it this year, lawmakers can absorb that $6 million into either grant and aid or bond bill, and then they get to continue debate on WIAC for another year, but crucially in a non-election year for those who might feel pressured.
I was going to say for WIAC, it may be a decent plan to get it approved this year, realize you're going to have to suspend it because the funding's not there, and then come back, as you said, in a non-election year and haggle over the money, but at least you know you've got the approval to do it already in place.
Exactly. And then it's just a, you know, you get 6 months to a year to figure out whether or not a statewide property tax reassessment might be in play, or allowing districts to raise property or tax revenue without a referendum.
And I guess because they're not going to get much help, presumably, from the state budget and revenues next year. The revenue estimates don't suggest that there's going to be an extra pool of money available for anything, including WIAC, come next year.
Well, there's talk of the next governor possibly raising corporate taxes, which could the figure I've heard thrown around is about $100 million. Mm-hmm. But it's unknown if that would get eaten up by the prevailing forces with the economy. So that's not even a slam dunk right now, even though maybe in January it might look like they have an extra $100 million to spend around.
Okay. Let's finally talk about Republican candidate for governor, State Senator Colin Bonini, who made news at the end of the week coming out in favor of legalizing marijuana. What prompted what I guess most would say is a pretty stunning move?
Yeah, I can't speak to his motives, but Bonini says it's because the state should more strictly regulate marijuana, since he says they already have a de facto legalization system in place. We saw the passage of decriminalization come last year, and there's been rumblings of a bill to legalize it recreationally for you know, at least a past few months for that I've heard, and that bill could come next year. We don't know exact details of his plan, but he says he'd limit it to those 21 years or older, with tax proceeds going to addiction treatment programs. And like you mentioned, this is fairly unprecedented since Congressman John Carney doesn't support it, Governor Jack Markell doesn't support it, Attorney General Matt Dehn doesn't support it, and Lacey Lafferty certainly does not support it.
Is it likely to be much of a campaign issue? And I guess could Bonini look at it from the economic standpoint, like, hey, this is a potential revenue source?
It's not so much that. It's just that he feels that actually he did tell me that he would rather roll back all of these new regulations that they have in place, whether it's for decriminalization or medical marijuana. He would rather just go back to it being completely scheduled as a dangerous substance. But it definitely differentiates himself in the field, that's for sure. Like I said, Congressman John Carney supports decrim, but not full legalization. And Lacey Lafferty on Twitter yesterday said it would be, quote, the end of civilization if recreational marijuana were to become legal. I think it's likely to steal votes away from Lafferty, who has billed herself as a Tea Party alternative. But a significant wing of that Tea Party leans libertarian, and legalized marijuana has been a big issue for them. As for the general election, a single issue like this just doesn't seem strong enough to overcome the steep voter registration advantage Democrats have.
Sure. Well, it's going to be interesting to watch how it plays out one way or the other. Political reporter James Dawson, we thank you so much for being with us again on The Green this week.
Thank you.